Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, my very special guest is John Hemmerling. He's a retired Marine Corps colonel and combat veteran, a former San Diego police officer, and he has served as head prosecutor in the City of San Diego's Criminal and Community Justice Division. Now he's running for San Diego Sheriff, hoping to fill the vacancy left by the retirement of long-serving Sheriff Bill Gore. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me here, Miriam. I really appreciate the opportunity and the time to get to speak to your listeners. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, it's a pleasure. We really believe in letting people hear directly from the candidates wherever possible. So can you start? I've mentioned some of your qualifications, but can you tell us a bit about what you consider your most relevant experience and your top goals if elected?
Well, I think probably my most relevant experience would be the leadership that I bring, and that's a lot what I talk about whenever I go and I speak to individuals about this position of sheriff, which is not unlike any other business or government organization that's rather large, that you need leadership at the top and you need strong leadership at the top. And I've spent 30 plus years in public service, starting with my time in the Marine Corps, then at San Diego Police Department, and my current job as the Chief Criminal Prosecutor in San Diego. And it really is speaks to leadership, and that's what it's about. When I was in the Marine Corps, between active and reserve time, I spent 30 years. I retired there as a colonel. I led at every level. I was a small unit commander. I was a company commander. I was a battalion commander. As you said, two combat tours. My last combat tour, I was in Iraq. I coincidentally also part of the job of the battalion that I ran when I was in Iraq. We ran jails while I was there. We had four jails that we processed and high value targets that came through, thousands and thousands that we did without incident. And then my time in the police department. I think I arguably worked in probably one of the toughest crime areas in the entire county. I worked in the City Heights area of San Diego for nearly a decade. I left there as a field training officer. I went to law school while I was working a beat there. I went to law school at the University of San Diego. I eventually became a criminal prosecutor at the city attorney's office. And I worked my way and I did a few different jobs there. I eventually did some advising to the police department. I eventually became chief legal counsel to the police department in San Diego, where I was advising legal issues to two police chiefs. I then moved and became the current job that I have, which is the chief criminal prosecutor in San Diego. And I have a very large staff, hundreds of individuals that prosecute cases. We prosecute about 18,000 cases a year in the city of San Diego. So I've been leading that for about 5 years now, 6 years now.
So that's a lot of criminal justice experience.
Yeah, absolutely. As I say, I cover the whole spectrum from putting handcuffs on somebody, in a dark alley at 2 a.m. to prosecuting them in court, to then finding out, kind of what cases that we want to prosecute and running a large staff who goes to court and prosecutes those cases as well. So that's what I bring. It's leadership. I've done it in different organizations.
Okay. Well, you mentioned jails, and obviously one of the big issues in this race is the high number of jail deaths that San Diego has, which is actually the highest of any major county in California. It's been the target of a state audit, and the auditor called for major reform. So, John, do you support the proposed reforms the auditor came up with, and or do you have any other approaches to help reduce the high number of jail deaths and also the high number of suicides in our county detention facilities?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I will say is that I will do everything possible to ensure that we have that no one else dies in our jails. Nothing's going to be an absolute. There's things that will happen, but I'm going to do everything I can do possible to make sure that we don't have people dying in the jails. As I mentioned, I was as a Marine Battalion Commander in Iraq. I ran that, and I provided comprehensive medical screening to every person who came into the jails there. And I will assure you that I'm going to make the jail policies aligned with best practices, performing intake, health evaluations, follow-up medical, correcting all the deficiencies that were identified in the auditor's report. I think that also some of the ways that we can solve some of these issues is the individuals that come into jail, we need to ensure that maybe we're screening them before they come in. Kind of, as I say, the best way to keep somebody from dying in jail is maybe they shouldn't be in jail.
So I'm not talking about screening criminals. For drugs or mental illness issues?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I will ensure that behavioral health services, county health and human services provide life-saving and life-preserving medical and psychiatric care to inmates, both during booking and then after receipt of custody, if we have them, because, deputies shouldn't be responsible for doing the job of professional behavioral health staff. I will demand better. We need to have better in that area, and it can be done. It just needs strong leadership.
Okay, thank you. You have stated that reducing violent crime is another of your top priorities, John, on your website. What are some of the specific steps that you would take to accomplish that and also to help crime victims, which you mentioned as a priority as well?
Yeah, I think it's important that we talk about some of the things that, addressing violent crime. I think the key thing that you can do with addressing violent crime is making sure that it is a priority and you staff it appropriately. And staffing meaning that you, whenever crimes that occur, you can ensure the public that if a professional law enforcement officer show up and they investigate the crime and they make it clear that they care about the victims and they care about the community. We've seen it way too often in the last decade and more, all the laws that have changed that have kind of, changed the landscape on what's going on out there in our community with criminal justice. One of the examples that everyone knows about is Prop 47, which was dubbed the, Safe Neighborhood, Safe Schools Act, but it was anything but that, right? I mean, it was virtually a get out of jail free card for individuals that were committing crimes. And this cycle of drugs that is basically legalized it, but there was no backup, behavioral health services to keep these individuals from committing more crimes and give them services. So I'm going to focus on the neighborhoods that have been, underserved on getting someone that comes out and cares about the community, cares about the crime in the community, and cares about victims. And I'm talking about, I do mention violent crime, but I've noticed now as I've been speaking to a lot of communities, it really covers the whole spectrum. From minor crime, say someone's bicycle gets stolen, someone's garage got broken into, all the way to violent crimes, the whole spectrum is not being properly attended to by law enforcement, and they're not respecting the victims and their concerns. And I don't mean they're being disrespectful. I just mean that it's not taking the full steps to investigate those crimes and eventually holding somebody accountable. And that's what I'm going to do. We're going to hold them accountable. What ends up happening down the road on some of the laws that whether they're prosecuted and then they go spend time in jail. Those are things that we're going to hope our legislators in Sacramento are going to eventually work on and fixing some of those things.
Okay. You have indicated that you see a need to improve morale also in the sheriff's department. Can you tell us what you think is behind the, the problems with the morale and how you would tackle that issue?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple things. I think that it's the morale is another because, and it's some of it's related to really the last couple of years. I think we have all seen this, right? The last couple of years, the way kind of the perception of law enforcement, the perception of, of what law enforcement does and their interactions in the community and some of the bad press, to be honest, has really been unfortunate. And it's made it, it's caused a morale problem. It's caused a recruiting problem. And that's some of it, the defund the police and the overreaching vaccine mandates, things like that are things that have contributed to it. But again,
The sheriff's department never had a vaccine mandate, though. So some others did, San Diego police, but it was never imposed to the sheriff. Am I correct?
Well, what happened was the county imposed it for all new employees.
So. Oh, I see.
Okay. Correct. You're correct. They did have for ones that were currently there, but then for any new employees.
Got it. So it would affect the new hires then.
So it would affect new hires. And they have plenty of vacancies at the sheriff's department, just like several police departments in this county do. And I think that's some of it, we can get to that. But there really just is kind of this, low morale everywhere that you go out there. And it's reflective whenever you see individuals show up to calls for service in the community. And it's kind of, and there isn't as much motivation there. And I can tell you that there's any number of things that can cause that. And I do know that There's a split right now at the sheriff's department between corrections deputies and law enforcement deputies, you know, and that causes a morale problem too. And I know Deputy Sheriff's Association has tried to work on this in the past, and they've had some ideas and some solutions to kind of merge those. Mm-hmm. Haven't gotten there, but I do intend on working with the Deputy Sheriff's Association, both to improve working conditions and pay, but increase, you know, advancement opportunities and, you know, institute sound changes that prevents stagnation. I mean, when you have stagnation, you know, and people can't see their careers going anywhere, that, of course, also affects morale as well.
Yeah, good point. On the other side of the coin on the morale issue is that the recent racial justice protests nationally and locally have exposed concerns by many people of color about equity and fairness in policing. So while also working to restore the morale among officers or deputies, what would you do to help restore trust by the public and improve equity? And also on a related note, can you comment on the rise in hate crimes, including a recent one, I think just last week out in Lakeside, and what steps you might take to address those? I know there's a sense by some in some communities that, you know, these are sometimes marginalized or ignored.
I worked almost as a decade as a San Diego police officer in, like I said, in Mid-City Division. I mean, it was quite a diverse community, you know, and I found that the community connection that I had there, you know, by taking time and helping families, you know, connecting with people in those neighborhoods promotes trust and transparency. But, you know, the ultimate goal of the sheriff and the thing that I've always will be saying, and you'll hear me say it, is that, you know, the number one thing of job of government is public safety, you know, and that is an absolute that the sheriff's department needs to keep in as one of their number one focuses is public safety and protecting people's lives. You know, and, you know, there's some communities that are impacted by crime, you know, we have to take a look at that. What is that? What is the trend? Are they receiving adequate support from law enforcement as well as other county services? You know, we can't let some of these neglected neighborhoods just be there because maybe we can't afford it or we don't have enough staffing. So we need to really take a look at that, because failing to provide adequate law enforcement in some of these underrepresented communities is just as bad as over policing. And, you know, and I understand about some of the things that are out there, but, you know, I believe that, you know, equal protection under the law is just not constitutional. It's also a matter of life or death for some of these communities.
Yes.
And you asked about hate crimes. You know, hate crimes have been on the rise, and I'm very familiar with hate crimes. In my current position as the chief criminal prosecutor, I instituted a system where we have it's called a vertical prosecutor that handles these hate crimes that come into our office. And what that means is, as soon as it comes in the door from law enforcement, it's assigned to one person. That one person takes that case all the way through, does more follow-up if necessary, contacts victims, does what needs to get done, goes to court on the case and handles the whole thing themselves. So they're very intimately familiar with it. I get briefed on every single hate crime that comes into our office that's brought to us for prosecution, so that I'm very familiar with kind of the trend out there and what's going on and the types of crimes that we have. I think it's important that we take these hate crimes absolutely serious. I mean, it's not unlike any other crime. Don't get me wrong, but these are a little bit different because sometimes they're not just targeted at someone who is, you know, trying to steal or someone who has a moment of anger. These are individuals that have some, you know, some deep core problems that are either racially motivated or gender motivated or some other bias motivated. And we really need to take the time to investigate those and find that out. And we need to make sure that the victims of those kind of crimes understand that it's important to law enforcement. It's important to the sheriff, and we're going to make it a priority. And I intend on doing that. I intend on making sure that investigating hate crimes is an absolute priority, and we're going to do it right, so that victims feel that they are getting the justice that's deserved.
Very good, John. Next, we have a question about the changes in scanner traffic. Since January 1st, there's a new state law that requires that private information not be transmitted over a public scanner, you know, certainly appropriate. Some agencies, such as San Diego Police, your former employer there, has moved private information onto a secure channel, but kept all of the rest of the transmissions open so that the press and public can listen and access these on a publicly available scanner channel. But the sheriff's department did the opposite. They've moved everything onto a secure channel. Our media outlet also operates the East County Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. And since this change, we have not been able to learn of some serious incidents in real time. Same with all the other media, such as an escaped prisoner recently in La Mesa, high-speed chases, and so forth. When we mentioned this to the sheriff's department, they did add some new site now where you can look on, and it will sort of give a very brief, couple-word description of what incidents are being dispatched, but it's really not useful in terms of being able to alert the public. It's so vague. It'll say, threat or something, and with absolutely no details. So my question for you is and I've asked all the candidates this, is if you are elected as the next sheriff, will you commit to restore access to the scanner channels for the press and public for everything that isn't required to be encrypted? That private stuff, it has to stay private.
The answer to your question is yes, absolutely. I will commit to that, and I will do what I can to, when I get in there, to start looking at what is the current systems that they're using, what is the process that they're doing, what's their policies, to get it to be where it's more transparent. One of my priorities that's listed, it's been on my website from day one, that I always talk about, is transparency and accountability will be one of my priorities, and this fits right in line with that. I think it goes with transparency to the public, right? When the public knows what's going on and they're more informed and they're engaged with the sheriff's department, they're going to be it's going to be a better relationship with the community, as well as the community is going to be very aware of public safety and the things that are going on in their community. So the answer to your question is yes, I absolutely will support that.
Very good. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
A couple more questions. You mentioned equity in all communities, and it isn't just the urban areas that have that as an issue. There are some rural towns in East County, such as Campo and Hacumba Boulevard, that have very long response times. A couple of years ago, we pulled public records and found that it was taking, in some cases, an hour on average to respond even to calls reporting a violent crime in progress. And yet, yeah, they have to wake a deputy up to go respond in these
yeah,
areas.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah.
Don't residents in those areas, they're taxpayers just as the urban residents are. What can be done to improve the sheriff response time so that they get equal protection to protect their safety?
Yeah, you brought up a great point, and I've talked about this also, Miriam, about the equity in law enforcement across the board. Because you're right, these individuals in the unincorporated areas and the very rural areas, they pay taxes for public safety just like everybody else does.
Yes.
I did notice that recently the Sheriff's Department just renewed contracts with some of the cities that they do their patrol and their police force, and I think it was like 9 contracts.
Yeah, includes Lemon Grove and Santee out here in East County.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. And what I intend on doing when I become sheriff is I'm going to look at each and every one of those contracts to make sure that it's fair to the taxpayers, it's fair to the community, and it's fair to the victims of crimes that are calling. So I do have, unlike everybody else, the skills to review contracts and make sure that everyone's getting the best deal and the best service. And I intend on doing that.
But the contracts don't cover the rural areas. They're right.
I understand that, but what I'm getting to is that impacts the entire sheriff's department's response, because it depends on how many deputies you have to assign to certain areas. And so that needs to be taken a look at holistically, those contracts compared to the amount of staffing that you have. Do you still then have adequate staff to cover the unincorporated areas that also need that same kind of service? So that's what I'm talking about. So it may require a complete relook at each one of those contracts to say, well, here's what we may need to do, because there's also service that's needed out in the unincorporated areas because they pay taxes and they deserve service as well. It may require me to go to the County Board of Supervisors saying I need more money to increase staffing.
Because I was just about to ask about that.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that I think a leader has to do, instead of saying, well, I can make do with what I got. But sometimes you may have to make do with what you got. That doesn't mean that you don't stand on your desk and you beat on it and say, it's unfair. This is what we're having to do. Right. We do need more staffing. It's public safety is a matter. And there's plenty of stats out there to show right now that crime is on the rise. It's especially violent crime is higher than it's been in the last decade or more. And so quite the opposite of defund the police. We need more police, and we need them to be in the areas that are underserved. And I have been hearing it from those places that that are unincorporated, and I'll use an example of the unincorporated of El Cajon and Bonita, some of those where they say they haven't seen deputies drive by for like a month or two, and or they when they call, it takes a day or two for them to come out to respond to the call.
Yeah, obviously, where I'm sitting, you know, Mount Helix area, they've got the same deputies patrolling all the way south to Jamul, pretty much down to the border, and all the way up to north of Interstate 8. I mean, obviously, you can't have a fast response time with that.
No, you can't. And it's not fair to the public. And it's not fair to the deputies. You know, if the deputy needs support, he has to get a long ways for somebody can provide support and help for him as well. So it's not fair to them. It's not fair to the public. And, and trying to chase your tail around just to try to, you know, put a Band-Aid on to make it seem like we're doing something is not good enough. We need to do better. Status quo is not good enough. We need to set a higher standard. We really do.
Yeah. Let's talk for a moment about gun issues. You have stated that you are a strong supporter of the Second Amendment and personal carry permits, an issue over which Sheriff Gore had been sued. You've been endorsed by the Republican Party and some conservative leaders. And yet you've also drawn some criticism from Michael Schwartz, the head of the County Gun Owners Association, I guess largely over your enforcement and, according to him, expansion of gun violence restraining orders under the state's red flag laws. I'd like to give you a chance to respond to that criticism. And also, if you could, share your stance on laws cracking down on ghost guns, you know, the homemade weapons that felons are often using who are not allowed to own their own guns.
Yeah. Well, it's true that I am a supporter of the gun violence restraining order and red flag laws. And it's not, San Diego Police Department. It's kind of been painted as I've been out there, the one doing these kind of things, but it's actually San Diego Police Department. And there's individuals from my office that do the follow up on it. But, you know, under some of the circumstances that that are out there, some limited circumstances where someone is in mental health crisis, someone is under serious, you know, drug concerns and drug problems where their brain has become fried, or they have some kind of, you know, ideological intent on dangerous criminal activity. You know, we need to make sure that law enforcement has what they need to go out there
So if someone's
and protect the community,
threatening to go shoot up a school or their
we've seen many of those kind of things. And so under proper circumstances where there's complete due process, you know, it is something that I think can be done properly and is useful to the community and also law enforcement. And contrary to popular belief, I support it only if there's full due process or a judge is involved and a judge makes that decision, not a biased, you know, person at the scene. So those are some of those key things there. I believe that there are some discussions about, especially if the county wanted to pass new ordinances on ghost guns and some of things like that. And, and I believe that I'm kind of in line with some of the comments that Supervisor Desmond said, is that there's already laws on the books for some of these things. We just need to enforce the laws that are on the books. And I can go across a whole section of places in the penal code where we already have laws. Sometimes we have too many laws that are duplicative that are just not enforced. So we don't need new laws out there for some of these things. What we need to do is we need to have professional law enforcement that understands it and goes out there and actually enforces the laws that are on the books to make the community safe. And if I could comment, because it kind of falls in that same category. I'm sure you were going to maybe bring up at some point about concealed carry permits.
Yeah.
You know, I am a strong advocate of the Second Amendment. I'm a strong advocate of the entire Constitution. As I've told people, I've taken an oath 8 times in my career to uphold the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So I 100% am a supportive of the Constitution. And when it comes to the issue of concealed carry permits, I think I'm going to be the strongest sheriff that you've seen in several decades. And I believe that good cause evaluation, which is part of what's asked for under the statute, you know, it allows each individual to assess their own need for personal safety and self-defense, which I think is good enough. If someone is a responsible citizen, they pass the background checks that are required, and they state their good cause is personal safety and self-defense, that's good enough. And this makes it available to everyone in the county, not just a limited people that have similar reasoning. And the current process, the sheriff's department is way too onerous. It requires too much stuff. And the sheriff's current process does not allow for that to be a good cause reason. So I intend on changing that. I intend on making it more in line of, say, some counties like Monterey County, which has got a policy very similar to that that makes it available to everyone in the community.
One of my readers who knew I was interviewing candidates asked me about rape kits. Do you know how many untested rape kits the department has, John? And do you believe, you know, more effort should be done to get as many of them as possible tested?
Well, I don't know the number, but I'm aware of the subject. And I will say that, you know, if possible, yeah, we should be testing all these kits. That's absolutely true. There's a statute that was passed that requires the Sheriff's Department and the San Diego Police Department, that who are the main labs that do that work, mm-hmm. that requires them to test all those rape kits. So that's a law that was passed. That's kind of out of the hands of the, whether it be a police chief or the sheriff. But I will say that, you know, if the investigation is done properly, you know, you take a rape kit, and sometimes, you know, if the person is already known and the suspect's in custody, you know, in the matter of, you know, that investigation, that's what kind of led to this. Maybe that kit wasn't tested because the police had then caught the suspect and had been identified by the victim as that's the person.
Somebody already confessed. Maybe that's
somebody already confessed, or there was something, or it's a known person. So the backlog that was created, that was created over the period of a decade or two is because the law enforcement was concentrating on finding the suspects. And when they found those suspects, those kits then were not immediately tested.
The thing is, sometimes when they test, they go back and find out maybe the same person was responsible for other rapes over a period of years, even once they get the DNA.
Yeah. And there's no doubt that there's absolute value in that, and that needs to be done. And I think that's where that law came to pass. It was, well, hey, if this person, even though they're known, they may have done other ones. So we want to check it. So, you know, I get, and I understand that, but that again comes down to, you know, cost, the cost of doing business. And sometimes when you don't have enough deputies or you don't have enough staff or lab people, and you want to help that immediate victim, you have to concentrate your forces on that to be able to do that. You know, one fire at a time, and then we can expand it. You know, unfortunately, a backlog was built up that caused, you know, what I think it was more of, just because of the numbers that people were upset about, more than what had law enforcement actually done to help those specific victims that were given those kits.
Yeah. What endorsements are you most proud of that you'd like our audience to know about?
Well, I'm very proud of the fact that I've got the endorsement from the Republican Party of San Diego County. I'm very proud that I've got the endorsement of the California GOP. I'm also very proud of having the endorsement of a couple, especially out in the East County mayors, Mayor Bill Wells and Mayor John Minto, two of the mayors out there that have endorsed me. The mayor in Coronado as well, Richard Bailey, and of course the former mayor in San Diego, Kevin Faulkner, who ran for governor last fall, also has endorsed me. I'm endorsed by the organization in my office, the Deputy City Attorneys Association, overwhelmingly endorsed me as well. So that's just some of the key ones. The former police chief in San Diego, who I was chief counsel for, Shelley Zimmerman, she also has endorsed me. So I know I listed probably more than what you were expecting, those are things that I'm proud of. And it's those individuals who understand good conservative law and order, and that's why they've endorsed me.
What else would you like voters to know about your candidacy, John, that I may not have asked about? And where can they find more information, your website address?
Well, I think we covered a lot of stuff here. I think we covered some of the big things that I wanted to do. What I really wanted to bring home, and hopefully we've done some of that, is leadership. Leadership is very important. It's important in every organization. It's important that you have strong leadership. It's important that you have a leader that's got great vision and a leader that's got a backbone. And I think I've made a great case for this on the things that I've talked about, whether it be my experience, being a prosecutor in my office, my experience of working as a beat cop, you know, the leadership that I bring as a retired Marine colonel with combat tours behind me, leading people in combat. The successes that I've done in different organizations, The understanding that I have of the entire criminal justice spectrum from the jobs that I've done. And I think, the idea of respecting criminal justice and getting back to that, instead of focusing so much on social justice, I want to focus on criminal justice, respecting communities and connect and respecting victims of crime. It's very important that we do that. And you're going to have that whenever I'm sheriff. So if anybody wants to read more about me, my website is johnhimmerlingforsheriff.com, johnhimmerlingforsheriff.com. And I've got information on there about me. There's some articles that I've published that are on there on some of the new stuff. And also some of the other interviews that I've done similar to this is also on my website as well.
Very good. Folks, we have been speaking with John Hemmerling, who is one of the candidates running for San Diego County Sheriff in the upcoming June primary election. We have previously interviewed two of the other leading candidates, Dave Myers and Kelly Martinez, and you can find all of these interviews soon on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. John, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ.
Great. Thank you, Miriam. Have a great day.